Oscar Podcast.
Do you really never see me when you come home late at night? I am always waiting alone for you.
And welcome to episode 4 of Oscar Podcast. I'm here with Craig Kennedy from Living in Cinema. I'm Sasha Stone, and we have Ryan Adams, and we're both from Awards Daily. Thank you for joining us. Today we're going to talk a little bit about Best Picture, and that's going to segue us into Best Actor. And we're hoping we can get to talk about the Gothams and the London Film Festival Awards, which just happened today. Okay, so let's just get started really quickly. I think that we were going to talk about how the Best Actor race is really heating up right now. I just found out from a publicist that Tom Holland from The Impossible is going lead instead of supporting, and he plays the son in The Impossible. And I don't know if he can get in because it's a really crowded category. But before we get to Best Actor, let's talk a little bit about Best Picture. So what happened this past week was that a lot of people started to see Spielberg's Lincoln, and I saw it, and it's a really strong Best Picture contender, a lot stronger, I think, than the New York Film Festival crowd would have you believe. I think it's a really, really strong contender. I think it's right up there with Argo right now. You can add Silver Linings Playbook if you want to that. So it's like three top contenders to win Best Picture. I'm not going to add in Les Mis yet because no one's seen it. So when I hear people say, oh, it's between this and Les Mis, it's not. Les Mis has not been seen, so it's not between that. It's not in the running. Lincoln is, I'll talk more about it when you guys have got a chance to see it. And I've written a lot about it already on the site, so there's no point in going into it except to say that I think it's really shaken up the Best Picture race. It's one of those movies that everybody thought was going to be in the Oscars and had on their predictions list, and you just never know. Is it going to be a hit or a miss? And in this case, it was, in my opinion, a hit, but I've talked to a few people who don't feel that way, who kind of have more mixed feelings about it. So, and Argo is kind of the opposite. Everybody sort of loves Argo. And that's how you know it's probably in the number one spot still to win, and you're really going to have a major crowd pleaser to compete against it. Life of Pi is another one that is in the running, and a movie I just saw called Flight, with directed by Robert Zemeckis with Denzel Washington, and John Goodman has a small part in Don Cheadle, and Flight is really good too, and it could be considered a Best Picture contender as well, but it's really all about Denzel. And the great cast and the plane crash scene. I mean, it's a really wonderful movie. It's, Denzel's Washington's best performance in a while. So those are the movies that have kind of burst onto the scene. We're still waiting to see what will happen with Beasts of the Southern Wild, which just won Best First Feature at the London Film Festival Awards and is nominated for Best Director and Best Ensemble Cast, I think, at the Gothams. So, and then Moonrise Kingdom is still hanging in there, and that kind of makes up, in my opinion, your Best Picture contender list. Do you guys agree or disagree?
Well, it's hard to say without having seen Flight or Lincoln yet, but it's interesting that so many of the Best Picture contenders that you mentioned are being carried by actors this year.
Right. Isn't that always the way, though?
Yeah, I guess so. Although, but to have all of them, I mean, every one of them, it seems like, that you mentioned is carried by an actor. I can't think of any of the actresses really the...
It seems like it's that way every year. It was certainly that way last year as well, except for The Help was the only one that was female.
Yeah, true.
Driven. So we have, coming up, we have Les Mis. That's kind of mixed. You know, it has a very central male figure. Zero Dark Thirty has a female kind of lead-ish, maybe supporting. And it has male cast, but it doesn't necessarily turn on a central male figure, which is really how, if you look at last year's Best Picture lineup, that's exactly how they all went. Strong central male figure, Best Actor contender. That's how mm-hmm. the Oscars roll these days, you know.
And yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess I kind of wiped it out of my mind, but because for one thing, I keep trying to forget about the artist, but the artist was absolutely that. Mm-hmm. The artist was all about the best actor.
And women are supporting characters. They're helpmates. Yeah. They're mm-hmm. you know, whatever. They're girlfriends. They're mothers. They're you know, they're not the central figure, except for the help was the exception. And this year so far. I mean, Middle of Nowhere, which has, like, no shot at Best Picture, is, like, the only one I can think of right in my head that is about, turns on a female. Moonrise Kingdom mm-hmm. has its male and female together. They share it. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
and
that's it.
In 2010, it was a little bit different because we had Black Swan, and we had Winter's Bone, and we had right. True Grit. And those were three, I consider True Grit to be carried by the actress.
And that's why it was so disappointing to me when the Academy went down away from the 10, because when they had the 10, you really saw for the first time ever in Academy history the chances for women filmmakers making films about women to get in there. So you had The Kids Are All Right. You had mm-hmm. Winter's Bone, and you had Black Swan, which was directed by a man but about a woman. So that was three mm-hmm. very strong female characters. And then they took away the 10 best pictures and went right back to normal, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Is it the Oscars, though, or is it the selection of movies? I mean, I'm trying to think this year examples of movies that are female-centric, and I'm drawing a blank, and maybe that's my fault. Am I missing something?
No, I think you're right about that. But I think in a 10...
Except for Silver Linings Playbook, maybe. We could probably say Silver Linings Playbook is probably carried by Jennifer Lawrence, right? I don't know. I haven't seen it. But, I mean, she's more likely to be nominated than Brad.
Yeah, but her whole thing is chasing after... I mean, yeah, I'm sure. But, you know, she's really the girl, the, you know, one that turns him around and blah, blah,
right.
blah. It's the usual story. But, yeah, it's probably a better part than most. But I think you're right, Craig, in that... It is the way Hollywood works. It's a vicious cycle. But I will say that if they had 10 Best Picture, there's a tiny chance that Middle of Nowhere could get in there because mm-hmm. Winter's Bone did. But under the new rules, I think it would have a really hard time.
And I mentioned it last week. I don't know if made it onto the podcast last week, but we ran down our list of perspective to 10 Best Pictures, and I named Middle of Nowhere as my number 10. Choice, hopeful, my wish list.
Yeah.
And also, I guess The Beast of the Southern Wild is nominated.
Absolutely.
That's
there
carried
you go.
By the... Yeah.
That's your one exception right there, Beast mm-hmm. of the Southern Wild, about a woman. I mean, a girl, a kid.
Or possibly, I'll say one more, because it may be an outside possibility, because although, Craig, you liked it, Anna Karenina.
Yeah. But I don't think Keira Knightley was the strongest part of it, but it was excellent.
But there
the more,
you go.
And in fact, I'm thinking about it more and more, and I'm liking it more and more.
And other movies on the fringes that have strong female storylines would be The Impossible, which is about a family, but a lot of it is Naomi Watts surviving with her son, and one other one. Oh my God, I just went out of.
What about The Sessions? It just opened on Friday.
And The Sessions, yeah, I haven't seen it, but
I've heard Helen Hunt is fantastic.
I have too, but again, it's about a guy, and she's the supporting. Character who comes in to help him lose his virginity, just like and that's fine, you know. I'm not saying these movies are bad or anything. I'm just saying that it's interesting that I know what I wanted. When I went to Cannes, I was struck by how many female driven films there are, like that one Beyond the Hills, the Romanian foreign mm-hmm. language. That's really good, and it's about two women mm-hmm. and Rust and Bone and Anna Moore. Those are three mm-hmm. movies that are strong female-driven storylines. Well, Moore, I guess you could say, was kind of about the husband, but...
They share for most of the film.
But they share.
And they're two wonderful performances.
It's about their marriage. It's about their love, you know. But in America, we have a hard time with that, you know. Part of that is we've diminished women down to they have to be hot, young things. They have to be Jennifer Lawrence, you know, in their early 20s, perfectly beautiful. you know, that people like that don't have a lot of life experience to write stories about, you know? So in all these other movies I'm talking about, these are women with lives and histories. You know, Marion Cotillard's lost her leg in Rust and Bone, and she's a dolphin trainer, and she has to go through all this kind of crazy stuff, learning to be a woman without this leg and how gross she feels. And I mean, it's an incredible performance, isn't it? Craig, you saw it, did you?
No, I'm seeing it next week.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
And it won at the London Film Festival today. This afternoon, it won Best Picture, right?
Oh, great. Yeah, that's right, it did. It won. So, you know, foreign films tend to sort of think of women more as human beings than in America, sort of the cross we have to bear over here. But little by little, I think that minds are getting, you know, gently eased open. The reason that it's always about men is because that's what drives the box office, I think. And that's why, back to what you were saying, Ryan, about how it's all about the more money. You know, well, nobody wants to take a chance on a movie about a woman.
I guess it's partly a societal thing, but it's also, I think movies shape society, and I blame movies a little bit. I think women would have a better standing in politics and more respect if movies respected them more.
It's possible. You know, where women really are doing well is on TV. You know, you have Homeland, you know, great, one of the best characters I've ever seen on TV, Claire Danes. Women are sort of allowed to age and have various struggles because it's not about the bottom line. It's not about money. Okay, so speaking of cheery subjects, now let's move on to Best Actor. So let's talk a little bit about our Best Actor frontrunners. I think that Daniel Day-Lewis has it in the bag for Lincoln.
The nomination, you mean? The nomination or the win?
I think the win. I think he's gonna win his third Oscar. Yeah, because I think that he's... he gives the kind of performance that is undeniable, like Helen Mirren in The Queen. It's just one of those you stand back in awe. But his main competition is Denzel Washington and Joaquin Phoenix. And of those three, Joaquin Phoenix is the one that has never won. And so now we get to talk about the Joaquin Phoenix controversy.
Yeah, well, you feel like maybe he shot himself in the foot this week, and I believe that I have mixed feelings about it, and I'm not sure how Craig feels.
Well, I don't think he shot himself in the foot. I think that he, he's being a little bit of a baby, and it's annoying to me that he's acting.
Can I just interrupt real quick? I know that you posted about it on the site and everything. And when I first heard about it, all I heard was just the quote, just the quote all by itself about the bullshit about it being a carrot that the carrot that tasted awful, and the whole system of having actors compete against each other was bullshit. By itself, that sounds really, really blunt and bad. But in the context of the entire interview, that was an amazing interview in Interview Magazine that he gave. I have such more respect for him after reading that entire conversation. And that was just a tiny part of it that got blown out of proportion, I think. When you read the entire interview, I think that in context, it's not really so bad.
That's the thing, that's what the Oscar thing that he, the one little paragraph, that's the only time in the entire interview, and it's a really long interview with a guy who hardly ever does interviews, and that's the only thing that people talk about. And I know it's ironic at best and it's hypocritical at worst that this is a Oscar podcast for me to criticize that, but it's true, and it's kind of frustrating and appalling to me because it kind of supports what it is he's saying. He's not criticizing the Oscars. In fact, he says at a certain point that he doesn't think that he's above it. He just doesn't want to go there. And the whole celebrity dog and pony show, when we were talking about it before with Tom Cruise and some of the other actors, all of that stuff to me goes against what makes a good actor. And those are the things that he's fighting against. His concern is giving a performance, and everything else is a distraction from that.
One thing he said in the interview over and over, and so he said it in so many different ways, trying to get a handle on himself and putting it into words, he convinced me that what he does is a different type of acting than what most people do who get nominated for an Oscar. And he doesn't really like Oscar-nominated performances, and I have to say I don't either. The performances that get the attention for the Oscars are not always, to me, the most convincing performances of the year, not by any means.
Right. Well, and his last three films, he's really been kind of a daredevil, I think, more than an actor. It goes back to Two Lovers, the James Gray film that he did with Vanessa Shaw and Gwyneth Paltrow. And then he did I'm Still Here, which this is a nail that I kept hammering in our last version of the podcast. But that was a fantastic, amazing performance. And everybody got caught up in the stunt of it. But even that film had so much to do with the notion of celebrity and all these things that kind of revolve around the acting profession but don't lead towards a good performance. Mm-hmm. And I think in retrospect, I hope that all the people who are excited by his performance in The Master will now go back and sort of reevaluate I'm Still Here, because I think that movie got the shaft because everybody was offended by the stunt that it was built upon more than they were really paying attention to what Casey Affleck and Joaquin Phoenix were trying to say with the film itself.
The thing is that you guys take that, and that's fine. I understand that. But to me, it's a white man's privilege to have those complaints, you know. Well, desperate to have, and can I finish? Desperate,
sure.
And it's all. I'm Mitt Romney now, and you're Obama.
It's okay.
I'm not.
You'll have your chance.
Talking.
You'll have your chance.
You will have your chance. I'm speaking now. But I'm just saying that, you know, it's frustrating that that he can complain like that. I'm not saying he's complaining. I'm just saying that, you know, so much to put a movie together, and they, you know, got financing. I forget how much the movie is, but it's not making back its money. And that's where an actor can help, not just themselves. They can help everybody that's a part of this movie to help it make money. And that's what Oscars do. They help the movie make money so that that person can go, you know, David Lynch. David Lynch doesn't make movies anymore because he can't afford to. He can't get anybody to finance his movies. He was totally crushed by the experience of Inland Empire. And like I said, he had to sit there with a cow on Sunset Boulevard trying to get people to notice Laura Dern's performance. So if people are paying attention to you, if they're talking about you like your movie is going to, you know, suck it up and deal. It's not very long. It's a few months out of your life, you know, and then it's over. And yes, you feel sleazy and disgusting. Who doesn't, you know? But you don't do it for yourself. You do it for everybody else that's been involved in the movie because that helps it. It gets it money, you know, it gives, you know, power and to everybody involved. They can say they were part of an Oscar nominated movie. It's all about that. It's all about politics. It's a game. It's a stupid game. So you don't believe in it, but you still do it. There's John Goodman on the Q&A for Flight. He didn't want to be there, and he was there for the publicity for The Artist, and he's doing all this stuff for Argo. He's doing that. He's showing up because he knows that's part of the job.
We should all feel lucky that we do anything that we do,
and that we live in America, and that we're
that's
white,
right.
And we,
you know, and that, maybe if I weren't so sensitive about the fact that they gave Obama such amount of shit for not acting like he was enthusiastic to be up there debating with fucking Mitt Romney, that he's not all into it, he's not all happy in the first debate to be debating, that he acted like he'd rather be someplace else, and people gave him a hard time about that. Maybe if I wasn't so sensitive about that, then I wouldn't have all this spilling over. But I'm just so uptight about this political situation, you guys.
We can hold on tight. Like, you know, I can be Ann Coulter.
No, you're not. No, you can't.
Craig gets to
you
be Hannity.
Let me be Sean Hannity.
And Ryan
can
gets
be
to be
Sean
Rush
Hannity?
Limbaugh. Ryan's Rush, you're Hannity, and I'm Ann Coulter. And we can be as mean and nasty as we want to be.
We still love each other, even when we disagree,
part of me
right?
So let's talk quickly about precedent. How many actors do you know that have sabotaged their potential Oscar chances, and it didn't really matter that they went on to win Oscars anyway because they were just that good. I know that a few examples I can think of offhand are Dustin Hoffman, who really outwardly talked about how much he hated the Oscars, Marlon Brando, who, you know, protested them, and George C. Scott, I think, did not accept his Oscar, right?
Right.
Or
and
was
he
that...
said he, although he waited until after he was nominated before he talked about how much he didn't like the Oscars, he waited until after he was nominated, which a lot of people thought was a little bit crass.
So who else can you think of? And can you think of anybody recently? Monique.
Monique, yeah. Although she wasn't really bitter about it. She just didn't want to participate. She didn't say anything bad about the Oscars. She just didn't want to take part in it.
Right. She never dissed the awards. She was always gracious and said, thank you for this. And I think if Joaquin Phoenix won an Oscar or any award, he would be gracious. I don't think he would say, I don't want this piece of crap. I think he would be in awe, you know, of having won. But can you guys think of any, or is there any more that we're forgetting about?
Well, the very same year that George C. Scott didn't accept his Oscar, Helen Hayes, you know, you would think someone who was getting basically a lifetime career Oscar, because we know that the role she played in Airport was nothing to be proud of, really. You would think that she would at least show up to get it, but she didn't show up to get the Oscar that night. She was in a play right across town at USC or something. She was performing on stage in some sort of, I think, Long Day's Journey into Night. She would rather have done that than go through the Oscars that night.
Well, one really great example is Woody Allen, who spent, I think, after the Sun Yi thing and his movies stopped making money, he got to that David Lynch moment where he had to actually appear at the awards, something he's been adamantly opposed to for most of his career. But it really, talk about someone where it did not matter at all that he not only hated the Oscars, but also just didn't come to the ceremonies. And Katharine Hepburn won 4 Best Actress Oscars and never came to the ceremony once. So I think that if you're considered a serious actor or a serious filmmaker, like if you're too good for the Oscars, they don't care if you complain. When I first started back in 1999, the idea was, you know, believe it or not, there was actually a time when nobody even went to the Golden Globe Awards. They used to have trouble luring stars. That was back when, like, Pia Zadora won, like Best Newcomer or something. But in the time that I've been doing this, in the 13 years that I've been doing this, I've watched them evolve to where now every star has to show up at the Globes. And if they don't, it's kind of this big deal. And it's much more competitive now than it ever has been for some weird reason. And you just see people like Jeff Bridges out on the red carpet, you know, appearing everywhere, doing everything, until he can practically, he can't even stand up anymore. He's been campaigning so hard. And he wins. And the same with Marianne Cotillard, you know. And so that's sort of the new model of winning an Oscar is this.
And Kate Winslet.
And Kate Winslet. Mm-hmm. So if you guys want to spend a few minutes talking about what you think, let's validate what Joaquin Phoenix is saying for a minute. Let's just say this. It is a horror show. People shouldn't compete like it's a horse race. They shouldn't talk about you know, who's best. It shouldn't be about personality. It should just be people voting on which performance they think is best, right?
Yeah, and I think the horse race is going to go on whether he willingly participates or not. And I think it becomes a situation where it's sort of like being really attracted to that, or to having the hots for that really attractive person that you can't have, and that not being able to have them makes you want them more. Mm. And I think his attitude may actually make him more desirable in a certain strange way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I used to think that was sort of the way back, like I say, when I started. It was alluring to be aloof, but that's changed. That dynamic has changed. That's why Sean Penn changed. You know, Sean Penn used to be the guy who really did turn his nose up at awards, but during Mystic River, Clint Eastwood sat him down and said, look, this is what you have to do. And he did it, and he won.
Yeah, and I don't think Phoenix is in the he doesn't have the cachet to really get away with that. I mean, he's coming off of I'm Still Here, which seemed like a career ender. He's actually pretty lucky to be involved with The Master. Ryan was talking before about how it directly led to The Master, but I think a lot of people assumed that his career was done. So he's not exactly a proven box office draw or anything. So
He himself might have been worried that his career was over. He himself might. He knows he's socially awkward. He doesn't make any secret of the fact that he's socially awkward. And in a way, that's almost can be endearing if you can accept it.
I don't think any of that hurts his chances for Oscar. And I never felt that his career was ruined after I'm Not Here, I'm Not There, whatever it was. I mean, the news travels so. I mean, the news cycles around so fast, and people forgot about that, you know. The only tiny thing, as I've said, and I'm not going to keep repeating it, is the timing is bad. That's all. And it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. It doesn't. It doesn't make a difference to his performance. So, you know, maybe it will make a difference. The Oscar voters are weird, you know. I don't know if I would ever. I was talking to Chris Tapley about this, and we were both like, you know, after all this time working on the Oscars, do you think you would ever want to win one? And I agreed with him, and I said no, because it doesn't. mean anything. It just means that these people in this group liked you for a few minutes. That's all. I mean, and that is our luxury to turn our noses up at. It's just not.
We know that for a fact that it has hurt as many careers because it puts such an expectation on someone after you win an Oscar. Look what it did to Halle Berry and Give Me the Money Guy. Who's he? I can't even remember his name. See. Give Me the Money Guy.
Show Me the Money.
Show Me the Money.
What's his name?
Anyway,
One thing for me I wonder about, and I don't know how people can really stand it, especially someone like Meryl Streep, although it makes it easier for her because she already had to, but to go year after year after year after year and show up and sit there in the audience and to lose year after year after year, the hurt and the humiliation, not the humiliation really, but just the anticipation and the letdown after that, that's got to be a really hard thing to go through.
Well, what if you were Bill Murray and everybody's staring at you, or Eddie Murphy when he didn't win for Dreamgirls, and he actually did all the stuff. He sucked all the dicks that you're supposed to, you know. He did all the publicity. He was showing up everywhere, you know, and he didn't win anyway. Mm-hmm. Alan Arkin did, and Alan Arkin did no publicity. So it's not always the case that it makes a difference if you're going to win or not. You know, it really, who knows what those prickly bastards think. So, you know, maybe he's just as well saying whatever the hell he feels like, because maybe it doesn't really matter in the end, you know. Myself, I would feel weird about sabotaging a movie that, whether or not he sabotages it, that just only made a tiny bit of money.
And if he did that, I really do think it was so unintentional. And so I think he would be so devastated to think that he did that, because that's the one thing that I regret so bad about this whole incident is that everybody is going to remember the soundbite about Oscars are bullshit.
So.
And nobody's going to read the entire interview and see how much respect he has for Paul Thomas Anderson and how much respect he has for the craft of acting. That interview is a seminar in acting.
It's not going to matter. I don't think it's.
I know it won't matter. But what do you mean? The soundbite won't matter, or the whole thing?
Yeah, the soundbite. Nobody's going to pay any attention to that. It's just for now. It's just one little tiny news story one day. It's worth for us to talk about because, you know, this is our business. This is our my business. This is my business. I can't speak for you guys, but, you know, this is the work that I do. It's sort of like being Chris Matthews or what's his name, Ed Schultz, and you know, being mad at Obama for not following the script, you know, and doing what you want them to do. And so, you know, it's a little bit of that getting mad at someone for not playing the game, you know, for taking himself out of the game intentionally or not.
Especially when you yourself have invested in Joaquin and you've done a great job supporting him and boosting him, and like you said, have been behind him, and then for him not to do his part. And that's the way I think that Chris Matthews and Ed Schultz also felt, that they're out there pushing for this guy, and then he doesn't do his part. He doesn't pull the load himself. So that is really frustrating. And I think it's okay to express that frustration in public.
But can I just say that I don't think that the Oscars are, you know, anywhere near, obviously. The presidency is a big deal. The Oscars aren't. It's just a dumb statue, you know.
But
all we're really talking about, all I'm really talking about, and please let's let this be the last thing we say on this, just that, you know, it's a kind of place you get when you're an evolved human being, when you can get over yourself and realize that it's not just about you, you know, that publicity matters and that, you know, a lot of people's careers can possibly be on the line, and that, you know, you, as the star of the movie, you want to try to help everybody involved in it. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, just to help your fellow man. But,
you're right.
But as a study on honesty, telling what, and that's, you know, sort of who he is, more power to him, you know, more power to him. He should keep saying whatever the fuck he feels like it till the day he dies. Be true to himself, whether he gets acting jobs or not, you know.
I think it's important.
But there's other people we haven't mentioned. There's John Hawks for The Sessions as Best Actor. You know, believe me, there's so many people fighting for that spot for Best Actor. That, like I say, that Tom Holland kid in The Impossible. Oh, and there's Bradley Cooper, Silver Linings Playbook, Philip Seymour Hoffman, The Master, Jean-Louis Trintignant from Amour, who is incredible, Richard Gere, Arbitrage, never been nominated for an Oscar, Brad Pitt, Killing Them Softly, is very funny and very good in that. Ben Affleck is great in Argo. Bill Murray is wonderful in Hyde Park on Hudson as FDR. And Tommy Lee Jones is amazing in Hope Springs. Amazing.
Denis Levant is great in Holy Motors. He doesn't have a chance in hell, but he was terrific.
Wait, can you talk about that, Craig? Because I read Katie Rich on Twitter say that she thinks he's better than every other performance this year. Do you agree with that?
No, but he was great, and he was great in a lot of different ways, all in the same movie. I mean, because he kept shifting gears from one thing to the next, and he completely disappeared into each different performance, and it was difficult to tell where the act began and the performance ended. It was a remarkable sort of acting workout. I still don't think he has a chance, but maybe I'm wrong.
Another actor who doesn't stand a chance because it's not the type of movie and it's not the type of role, but Jack Black was amazing in Bernie.
Oh, we got to talk about Bernie.
I was going to ask about that, whether you two sat down and watched it.
Yeah,
no, I was skeptical about it, and especially I was skeptical even after I started watching. I thought, oh, my God, here we go. It's going to be one of those movies that makes fun of Southern people or Texas people. But it was not that at all. It was so realistic. It was so down to earth. And it was real because not everybody in the movie was an actor.
The remarkable thing about his performance for me, and it was his performance that really helped make the movie work, is that I sort of expected what you expected, that it's going to poke fun at a certain subculture of Southern American life. And if he had played that character ironically or with his tongue in cheek a little bit, it wouldn't have worked at all. But he did it with such honesty and such a straight face that it added mystery to the character, but also made him appealing, even though he was a little creepy at times. Mm. And I wouldn't have expected that out of him, out of Jack Black, if somebody had told me that going in, that was the case. I wouldn't have necessarily believed them.
I didn't think he was capable of a movie like this either, or toning it down this much and blending in with real life people, because there were real life people from this real life town where this real life incident happened, and he fit in there perfectly. Mm. He fit perfectly in that milieu, you know, listen to me.
Yeah. I have to be the one to shit all over everything again.
Oh, no.
All right.
I'm so sorry. I wish I could just agree with you guys all the time, but no, I felt like it didn't go deep enough and dark enough from my perspective. I think that it's actually a lot creepier of a story probably in real life than what they show. I didn't quite buy it. I thought he was okay. You know, he sort of skimmed the surface, I thought, of that character. I think for Jack Black, it was really good. But for me, I really wanted to know a little bit more about him and why he would have stuck it out with her for so long.
I kind of like that they left it a mystery because for me, the movie ultimately was more about the community and the way they responded to these strange events. It was ironic to me that they wound up sort of supporting him, even though it was questionable. His behavior, I don't want to say what he did because it's kind of a spoiler, but he does enough things in the movie where you should not be sympathizing with him, but the community picks him over the Shirley MacLaine character, who doesn't do anything wrong, but she just happens to be kind of a bitter, cranky old lady, so she doesn't have anybody's sympathy. I thought that was fascinating.
Hmm.
Especially the fact that you wouldn't expect that a small town, that a small Texas town would accept a character who's borderline, one of the characters describes him as light in the loafers,
right.
You know, which is exactly how they would say it in Texas, exactly how they would describe him. But they're accepting of that, and they're tolerant of it.
Yeah. Again, I'd like to have seen a little bit more. I think this is where a more sort of skilled, schooled actor might have been able to pull off a little bit more creepy depth there. Where for someone I am going to say it because the movie, I mean, spoiler alert if you haven't heard what it's about, but it's a true story and everybody pretty much knows what it's about. But you know, if he's going to do that, if he's going to commit that kind of crime, that is going to a pretty primal place. I didn't buy that you just all of a sudden walk over, pick that thing up and do that. I felt like to go there, to reach that breaking point, there would have been an actor, you know, a better actor might have been able to sort of, you know, pull us in. In creepy little moments, in tiny little, teeny little throwaway moments where you see a flash of it. I'm not saying he's like a serial killer or anything like that, but he, you know, he was pushed to the edge. He obviously was a good person who just really wanted to help people. It wasn't about the money, you know, but like I'm thinking of a movie like Reversal of Fortune where, you know, you spend the movie not really knowing if Klaus von Bülow was guilty or not. You spend the movie not knowing, and the movie plays with those expectations. I never felt that this movie played with it. I felt that they just pretty much wanted you to think that he was just this nice guy who happened to snap, you know. And I think that it would have been nicer, or not nicer, but more interesting to me if a little bit of his psychosis, if it did exist, could have popped out here and there a little bit more.
Where I disagree, because it's the mystery that made it fascinating for me. I don't think even to this day we really know what his motives were, whether he was a bad person or a good person who did a momentary bad thing. I don't think that's at all clear, and I don't think it's supposed to be.
I think
to play it one way or the other, to tip the hand, would have been a mistake.
That's not what I said, though. I mean, in Reversal of Fortune, they don't tip the hand, but they keep you guessing, and they take you down a lot of different roads with Klaus von Bülow. Sometimes he seems like he's guilty. Sometimes he doesn't, you know. But I felt in this movie they never really went down that road of sometimes you think that he is a creepy guy who either was just after her money or was psychotic or whatever it was, you know, like they never dip into that side. So they could have done it where, you know, every once in a while you get a moment where you wonder, you know, did he, you know, who is this guy? Who is he really? I felt like I pretty much knew who he was, you know, like
I still don't know. I honestly don't.
He seemed fairly straightforward to me.
Yeah.
If he had had any history, if he had any past history of being a criminal sociopath, I would have been more confused or wanted to see more of his sociopathic sides coming through. But since he didn't seem to have a history of that, I almost do think that it was something that just burst out and then receded. And it's not as if this is not a movie like Shadow of a Doubt. Well, it's not a Hitchcock movie where you have a charming, creepy guy who you want to be charmed by him, and you don't want to think Uncle Charlie is a bad guy, but you know that he is. It almost reminded me. We didn't get a Coen Brothers movie this year. It's the closest thing to a Coen Brothers movie that we could hope for.
I thought it was Coen Brothers Light. Totally.
It was. It was. Right. It's Coen Brothers Light. Yeah.
It was Coen. Well, the Coen Brothers would have. You know, I don't know. I think that they love to have ambiguous characters that are hard to figure out. You know, I didn't feel like Jack Black was ambiguous to me, though. He seemed fairly straightforward, like you said, Ryan. He seemed like somebody who just snapped one day, and that was that. You know,
I guess that's why we had a different response to the movie, because to me there was a ton of ambiguity, and to play it either way wouldn't have worked as well.
But
you're saying it was played a certain way, and it was played towards the way that makes it suggest that he's relatively innocent who just happened to snap.
Right, and I would like to have seen. I think he's capable of it as an actor, even though not quite as capable maybe as somebody who's actually an actor, not a comedian turned actor, but somebody who. You know, is well trained to do that kind of thing. But I still think Jack Black has it in him to do that. If the director had said, go for it, you know,
and that's the thing is a lot of that falls on the director. The director tells the actor what they want and decides when he has what he needs. So maybe it's not Jack Black's fault, but Richard Linklater's fault.
What do you think about Shirley MacLaine in that?
But my frustration with it is I wish that she'd had more to do, because she's such a wonderful personality and a wonderful actress that I wish that she had more to do.
I think it's her best role since Postcards from the Edge, and it reminded me a lot of Postcards from the Edge. She knows she's got a good, solid script. She knows she's got a good role. She seems like she's had a lot of fun with it. Mm-hmm. She the little gestures and body language that she had was absolutely perfect. She's my grandmother. She reminded me so much of my grandmother. If her voice was a little bit more like Lily Ledbetter, if her voice was more like Lily Ledbetter, she would be my grandmother. So I know these people, and that's why I really feel it was authentic. You know, it really seemed authentic to me. The way that she would recoil when everybody would touch her.
Yeah.
Right.
That was great. That was so great.
She was so mean to him. I felt like it was sort of a movie that was saying, in some cases, it is okay to commit murder. That's what I felt like the movie was saying by the end of it. Like, who cares? No harm was done. A bad person was put to death.
The thing is, though, that's what the entire community thought. That's what the community almost agreed together to decide the fact that they thought that, oh, well, it's not so bad. You know, he's a good person, and she was a bitch. So that's to have an entire little town agree that, you know, don't be so hard on this guy. That was weird. It's a strange situation.
It was weird. That was weird. But you know who I really loved in it? My favorite was Matthew McConaughey as the. The cop guy, the sheriff. Mm-hmm. He was so funny. I mean, I have to see Magic Mike because of him. You know, I think he's so great in this. I've never seen him play that kind of a character before, and I thought he was really funny and entertaining the whole time.
That's his fourth great, his first of four great performances this year.
Well, what are the other two?
Bernie. I'm sorry?
What are the
name them for us?
Magic Mike, Bernie, Killer Joe, and The Paperboy.
Right.
Oh, who was he in The Paperboy?
He was the newspaper guy coming back to his hometown from Big City, Florida, to investigate a possible wrongful imprisonment. And that and Killer Joe were both kind of sleazy, weird characters that kind of go against type for him, and it was great.
If you had to pick one, which would you pick for his Best Supporting Actor nomination?
I would pick Magic Mike because it's the most entertaining and it's the most likable, the most charismatic, and the most approachable.
And the best movie, I would say. I would say it's the best of the four movies I would say.
Better than Bernie?
I don't know that I would go there, but I did like it a lot. I mean, it was just different than the others.
Mm. That's exciting about him because, you know, he is somebody who people had pretty much written off. Talk about someone who's been written off, you know, for just doing like big blockbuster kind of shitty movies. And then again, it's important to sort of get out of that mindset of like the Jeff Wells mindset. 'Cause he's the one who's always complaining about it. But, I guess Chris Tapley wrote some kind of an article about, Matthew McConaughey saying how he was, you know, it was just like one of his best years ever. And, yeah.
It would be a shame if he doesn't get recognized for one of those roles.
I liked him in Bernie, but I have to see Magic Mike and decide but I put him down in the contender tracker for Bernie because I just thought that was a really spectacular standout performance.
I think he got more attention for Magic Mike. And like I said, it's a more fun performance.
Yeah.
But he was great in Bernie too. That's where I first noticed him this year. It's like, wow, what's Matthew McConaughey up to? And then he did Magic Mike right after that. And I'm like, wow, holy shit, this is amazing. And then Killer Joe, and then The Paperboy on top of it. It's just like
I should probably see Killer Joe before I say that the other movies are better than Killer Joe. So I should put that as a footnote. I haven't seen Killer Joe, so
no,
I can't judge.
Either. The same here. So that's, you know, that's going to be tough for him because if all these studios sort of come at it hard, his power is going to get split up. You know,
right.
He's not going to have just the one performance. But
that's the other thing about Magic Mike is that Warner Brothers is behind that, so there might be a bigger push because of that because they're bigger. But who knows?
Yeah, for sure.
What's the supporting actor field look like? Is it as crowded as the best actor field?
Let's see here. I don't think so. Tommy Lee Jones, I think, is in the lead for Lincoln. He plays Thaddeus Stevens, an abolitionist. he's sort of the heart and soul of the movie. He really steals the show big time. He's great in the performance. You know, Tommy Lee Jones is always good. It's a total scene stealer. And then there's Alan Arkin for Argo. It's too small of a part. Robert De Niro cries in Silver Linings Playbook. It's pretty good. Don Cheadle in Flight. Flight is full of great supporting performances. Bruce Willis in Looper is a long shot. Nate Parker in Arbitrage, another long shot. John Goodman in Argo, sort of small. And then I have Matthew McConaughey, Bernie, and Magic Mike. And then I have Dwight Henry from Beasts of the Southern Wild, who really actually should be nominated of all those that I mentioned. So it's pretty light.
How about maybe Leo DiCaprio in Django Unchained? Do we know? We don't know anything about that yet, but I mean, we should keep it in mind.
Right, right. And who knows from Les Mis, and who knows from Zero Dark Thirty or The Hobbit. You know, we keep all forgetting about The Hobbit. That's coming this year, too. Believe it or not. For Best Actor, it's going to be Daniel Day-Lewis, Joaquin Phoenix, Denzel Washington. And then it gets tricky because it's John Hawkes for The Sessions. And then it's Hugh Jackman for Les Mis. You know, so it's Hugh, John, Denzel, Joaquin, and one more.
People are talking about the two, what I would call, what looked like to me from a distance, not having seen either movie yet, they look like impersonations to me, which I don't consider acting, as Anthony Hopkins as Hitchcock and Bill Murray as FDR.
Good point.
But I don't like that kind of movie for Best Actor.
I think Anthony Hopkins for Hitchcock for sure, probably.
You think?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Bill Murray in as FDR is good. It's just a light. It's a pretty light film, light comedy kind of thing. You know, it's got some interesting scenes because between him and the guy who plays King George, so it's sort of King George again, stuttering King George, and FDR, and those scenes are pretty interesting. But beyond that, it's not very deep. It's just kind of a trifle. You know?
Hitchcock looks like kind of a trifle too.
Does
a
it?
Little bit, but we know that it has potential to be more. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. It's as if FDR doesn't have potential to be more either. As if World War II is not more important than Psycho. Fuck, what am I saying? Never mind.
No. It's not really, it's funny. They don't really go into the World War II stuff too much. Like, it's sort of just about him and his women. It's weird. It's a weird movie.
I wonder what effect, if any, Toby Jones' portrayal will have on the perceptions of Anthony Hopkins' portrayal so close, since they're both going to be seen so close to each other.
I don't know. I just saw a little bit of The Girl, and it looked pretty thin.
Mm. So, how many times is Toby Jones going to give a good performance as a famous person only to have somebody else upstage him?
Poor guy.
It's happened with Capote, and now it's going to happen with Hitchcock.
Toby Jones is Lincoln.
No, that's so sad.
Poor guy.
Toby Jones is Lincoln. And then Daniel Day-Lewis comes along. Oh, God. and then I think, are there any, you guys seen Moonrise Kingdom, both of you guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you think there's any supporting actors in that? I don't think that there really is.
I think both Bruce Willis and what's his face?
Bill Murray again.
No, he was a relatively small, modest part of it. But Bruce Willis and American History X guy. I can't think of his name.
Yeah, what's his name again? God, we're getting old, Craig.
And we're totally old, plus I'm tired.
What's his name again?
Ed Norton.
Say it again like you mean it. No.
I don't know how to mean it.
I'm just kidding. Ed Norton.
No. Am I a trained monkey, for Christ's sake? Did you guys both watch Untouchables?
You know, I didn't. I'm sorry.
You didn't watch any of it, Sasha?
No.
Okay. I thought you might have watched part of it and then quit, because if you're like me, you started watching it and then you thought, oh, my God, I don't like this kind of movie at all. I was joking last week thinking I was joking that it might be the King's Speech where Jeffrey Rush is a black guy. But it's kind of like that, only worse. It's terrible. I mean, I don't like it. Craig, what did you think of it?
It won me over.
Oh, wow.
Okay, well, I went into it
with complete skepticism, and I thought, oh, shit. Pretty soon somebody's going to start singing Ebony and Ivory, and I'm going to throw up. But I'll save whatever I want to say if and when we ever decide to talk about it. I think it's interesting because...
All right. Yeah.
I'm sorry, you guys.
It's going to beat Amour. I'm sorry to tell Sasha this, but it's going to beat Amour for best foreign film.
No.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's a crowd pleaser.
I know, but crowd pleasers don't always beat them in the foreign.
Not always. And lately, foreign has been a lot better, I think, since they instituted the new rule to force people to actually watch all of them, that it's gotten better. But
but I agree with you that it has a really good chance because, first of all, it's like, isn't it like France's highest grossing film ever?
It could be. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is. I think it's made $355 million worldwide already. So, you know, for a French movie to make $355 million, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's probably so, going to win.
But that, to me, that makes me, I'm just so tired this year of people being able to get whatever they want because they've got money. And they're going to win more prizes so they can have more money.
But it's right? only because more people like it. Like, that's the thing. It's like, that was my weird spiritual dilemma with the King's Speech. It's like, it made $150 million. People loved that movie.
Well, if Craig says that it gets better halfway through, then I didn't get that far. So I think we should all give it a chance.
So we'll
I'll finish it. I quit after about 40 minutes.
And there were some parts of it I didn't like. There were some subplots that I didn't like. But at its core was a decent movie about two men who loved each other. And it was actually kind of moving and touching.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It didn't. I mean, the whole race thing in France is a lot different than it is here because they don't have the history of slavery and stuff that we have.
Right.
So they're not quite. I mean, it's still an issue, but it's not quite the same. And it was really.
It was more of a class issue than a race issue, right?
It was more of a class issue. And I thought that they were going to play up the whole, you know, he's going to introduce the rich white dude to Earth, Wind, and Fire, and the rich white dude's going to introduce him to Vivaldi. And that was kind of an element, but it didn't really go that way as much as I thought it was going to, and I would have been pissed if it did. It basically let both men remain who they were, but they still had an impact on each other, and it was kind of sweet and touching.
You've been listening to episode 4 of Oscar Podcast with Craig Kennedy from livingincinema.com and Sasha Stone and Ryan Adams from awardsdaily.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Oscar Podcast or at Living in Cinema, at Film Mystic, and at Awards Daily. We will be back next week, and the bumper music was Waiting Alone by Shiny Toy Guns and As Is by Annie DeFranco. Thanks for listening.
You can't hide behind social graces. Don't try to be all touchy-feely, 'cause you lie in my face of all places. But I got no problem with that, really. What bugs me is that you believe what you're saying. What bothers me is that you don't know how you feel. What scares me is that while you're telling me stories, you actually believe that they are real. And I got no illusions about you. Guess what? I never did. When I said I'll take it, I meant as. Give up and admit you're an asshole. You would be in some good company. And I think you'd find that your friends would forgive you. Maybe I am just speaking for me. When I look around, I think this is good enough. And I try to laugh, whatever life brings. When I look down, I just miss all the good stuff. And when I look up, I just trip over things.